Chapter 39. Waiting woman, cries my lady. How do you suppose that a sentimental widow, who will live down in that dingy dungeon of a castle wood, where she spoils her boy, kills the poor with her drugs, has prayers twice a day, and sees nobody but the chaplain, what do you suppose she can do, mon cousin, but let the horrid parson, with his great square toes and hideous little green eyes, make love to her? See le qu'est vous, mon cousin. When I was a girl at Castlewood, all the chaplains fell in love with me, they've nothing else to do. My lady went on with more talk of this kind, though, in truth, Esmond had no idea of what she said further, so entirely did her first words occupy his thought. Were they true? Not all, nor half, nor a tenth part of what the garrulous old woman said, was true. Could this be so? No ear had Esmond for anything else, though his patroness chatted on for an hour. Some young gentlemen of the town, with whom Esmond had made acquaintance, had promised to present him to that most charming of actresses, and lively and agreeable of women, Mrs. Brasegerdal, about whom Harry's old adversary Mohun had drawn swords, a few years before my poor lord and he fell out. The famous Mr. Congreve had stamped with his high approval, to the which there was no gainsaying, this delightful person. And she was acting in Dick Steele's comedies, and finally, and for 24 hours after beholding her, Mr. Esmond felt himself, or thought himself, to be as violently enamored of this lovely brunette, as were a thousand other young fellows about the city. To have once seen her was to long to behold her again, and to be offered the delightful privilege of her acquaintance, was a pleasure the very idea of which set the young lieutenant's heart on fire. A man cannot live with comrades under the tents without finding out that he too is 25. A young fellow cannot be cast down by grief and misfortune ever so severe, but some night he begins to sleep sound, and some day when dinner time comes to feel hungry for a beefsteak. Time, youth and good health, new scenes and the excitement of action and a campaign, had pretty well brought Esmond's morning to an end, and his comrades said that Don Dismal, as they called him, was Don Dismal no more. So when a party was made to dine at the Rose, and go to the playhouse afterward, Esmond was as pleased as another to take his share of the bottle and the play. How was it that the old aunt's news, or it might be scandal, about Tom Tusher, caused such a strange and sudden excitement in Tom's old playfellow? Hadn't he sworn 1,000 times in his own mind that the lady of Castlewood, who had treated him with such kindness once, and then had left him so cruelly, was, and was to remain henceforth, indifferent to him forever? Had his pride and his sense of justice not long since helped him to cure the pain of that desertion, was it even a pain to him now? Why, but last night as he walked across the fields and meadows to Chelsea from Pall Mall, had he not composed 2 or 3 stanzas of a song, celebrating Brasegerdal's brown eyes, and declaring them 1,000 times more beautiful than the brightest blue ones that ever languished under the lashes of an insipid fair beauty? But Tom Tusher, the waiting woman's son, raising up his little eyes to his mistress. Tom Tusher presuming to think of Castlewood's widow. Rage and contempt filled Mr. Harry's heart at the very notion. The honor of the family, of which he was the chief, made it his duty to prevent so monstrous an alliance, and to chastise the upstart who could dare to think of such an insult to their house. 'Tis true Mr. Esmond often boasted of republican principles, and could remember many fine speeches he had made at college and elsewhere, with worth and not birth for a text. But Tom Tusher to take the place of the noble Castlewood faw, 'twas as monstrous as King Hamlet's widow taking off her weeds for Claudius. Esmond laughed at all widows, all wives, all women. And were the banns about to be published, as no doubt they were, that very next Sunday at Walcott Church, Esmond swore that he would be present to shout no, in the face of the congregation, and to take a private revenge upon the ears of the bridegroom. Instead of going to dinner then at the house that night, Mr. Esmond bade his servant pack a portmanteau and get horses, and was at Farnham, halfway on the road to Walcott, 30 miles off, before his comrades had got to their supper after the play. He bade his man give no hint to my lady dowager's household of the expedition on which he was going, and as Chelsea was distant from London, the roads bad, and infested by footpads, and Esmond often in the habit, when engaged in a party of pleasure, of lying at a friend's lodging in town, there was no need that his old aunt should be disturbed at his absence indeed. Nothing more delighted the old lady than to fancy that mon cousin, the incorrigible young sinner, was abroad boxing the watch, or scouring St. Giles. When she was not at her books of devotion, she thought Etheridge and Sedley very good reading. As he had 100 pretty stories about Rochester, Harry German, and Hamilton, and if Esmond would, but have run away with the wife even of a citizen, 'tis my belief she would have pawned her diamonds. The best of them went to Our Lady of Chalet, to pay his damages. My lord's little house of Walcott which he inhabited, before he took his title, and occupied the house of Castlewood lies about a mile from Winchester, and his widow had returned to Walcott after my lord's death as a place always dear to her, and where her earliest and happiest days had been spent, cheerfuller than Castlewood, which was too large for her straitened means, and giving her to the protection of the ex-dean, her father. The young Viscount had a year's schooling at the famous college there, with Mr. Tusher as his governor. So much news of them Mr. Esmond had had during the past year from the old Viscountess, his own father's widow. From the young one there had never been a word. Twice or thrice in his benefactor's lifetime, Esmond had been to Walcott, and now, taking but a couple of hours' rest only at the inn on the road, he was up again long before daybreak, and made such good speed, that he was at Walcott by 2 o'clock of the day. He rid to the end of the village, where he alighted and sent a man thence to Mr. Tusher, with a message, that a gentleman from London, would speak with him on urgent business. The messenger came back, to say the doctor was in town, most likely at prayers in the cathedral. My lady Viscountess was there too. She always went to cathedral prayers every day. The horses belonged to the post house at Winchester. Esmond mounted again, and rode on to the Earch, whence he walked, leaving his grumbling domestic at last happy with a dinner, straight to the cathedral. The organ was playing. The winter's day was already growing gray. As he passed under the street arch into the cathedral yard, and made his way into the ancient solemn edifice. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.